mouth.
Word of 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 mouth.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, this is Word of Mouth, and I'm Virginia Prescott. When William Broad held his first yoga pose in 1970, his goal was better health in mind and body. Not long after that, he began writing about science for the New York Times. More than four decades and about 20 million yoga practitioners later, William Broad's attempt to mete out yoga facts from the myth set plenty of generally serene yoginis into warrior pose. Broad is a senior writer with the New York Times and author of the new book, The Science of Yoga. In January, the Times excerpted a chapter of his book called How Yoga Can Wreck the Body, spurring a frenzy of online responses, articles, and vitriol from yoga defenders and detractors alike. But that chapter is only a part of a much broader book in which William Broad relies on research, interviews, and peer-reviewed science to examine the myths and the miracles of the practice. Of the practice that was brought from India, but pretty much heartily embraced here in America. William Broad, thanks so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure, Virginia.
Well, you've been kicked around a bit from this. I've spoken to a lot in the yoga community who've said that this has started a really good conversation. What do you think a month in?
That's the feedback that I'm getting. I did a book signing on Saturday, and I was delighted to find a yoga teacher waiting for me. And we talked for an hour. As I signed books. And it was so gratifying to see the level of interest and comprehension, the questions, the back and forth, all of which is going to this idea of trying to produce better yoga, which is a wonderful thing for the discipline and for individual practitioners.
Well, let's start where you began in the New York Times piece. Talk about the moment when you realized yoga could harm as well as heal.
Well, it hit home for me personally in 2007, right when I was starting my research. I was in an advanced class for teacher training. There were a lot of very limber and, frankly, quite attractive women. And we had partnered off, and I was doing an extended side angle pose. And I was sort of strutting my stuff and feeling pretty good. And, wow, I'm an older, guy, but I'm doing great, right?
Yeah.
And kind of enjoying, chatting with my partner instead of paying attention to my lower back, which went out. And the pain was indescribable. I mean, it was like flashing lights and fire and, my tears running down my face. My knees failed. I collapsed. I hit a wall and I was there in a heap on the floor and eventually extremely embarrassed as everybody ran over and tried to see what had happened to the poor old guy.
Well, while your piece did receive a great deal of notice, I think 700 comments on the New York Times piece alone,
right,
until they just ran out of room,
right,
really, it can be only described as what was a pretty ferocious backlash. Now what struck mm-hmm. me as interesting, Sandeep Roy wrote in the Huffington Post, saying that what you're really pointing out here is that yoga has essentially been transformed by American culture, and therein lies the problem. What's your response mm-hmm. to that?
I think there's some truth to it. It's become this sort of hyperkinetic, hypercompetitive, bigger, better, faster, sleeker. It's taken on a lot of cultural attributes that it certainly didn't have when it first landed here from India. Bikram, one of the, some mm-hmm. people refer to it to McYoga, talks about, competitions, and there are yoga competitions now, and people love it. But it seems like it's less, at least as far as my own practice and my own understanding of the discipline, in some respects, it's less and less yoga-like.
Well, it is also a $5 billion industry now. So there are mm-hmm. people who are protecting their interests. And
Absolutely.
I should also say that I've been practicing yoga for 20 years myself.
Good for you.
Thank you. I know many in the community. And one woman told me that, the problem is that you don't make a lot of money as a yoga teacher in these,
right,
$12, $15 per class things.
Right.
But you do make a lot of money in teacher trainings. They put a lot of money,
right,
up front. So there's a kind of,
right,
yoga mill effect, and people are being churned out. And of course, I've spoken to others who say, well, we only care about safety here and your own individual practice. But, you know, I've also been bullied into headstands by yoga teachers.
Right. They're out there. That's the huge danger are especially the green, inexperienced teachers who may be very flexible genetically and think that everybody should be there and everybody should be doing what they can do after 3 or 4 weeks. And therein lies a lot of tragedy.
Well, let's move on to your book, The Science of Yoga. Now, why write a book on the science of something that many people regard really as a primarily spiritual activity?
Well, because I had a lot of questions. I'm a science journalist. I'm curious by nature. And I had been doing the practice. And belatedly, around 2006, it occurred to me that I could use the skills that I developed as a journalist, a science journalist, to try to answer some of these questions I had accumulated. And to my delight, I found that there was substantial science that had been done, which seemed like a wonderful opportunity, right? Yoga is surrounded in centuries of myth and claim, and for the first time, this science seemed to promise the ability to give an impartial evaluation of yoga. What's real? What's flaky? What's good? What's bad? You know, as I saw that there was this body of research out there, it seemed like just a wonderful opportunity, which it turned out to be.
What is some of that research that you'd like to bring to light for our audience today?
There's all kinds of good stuff. You know, I have this reputation as a yoga basher because of the Times excerpt. But more than half of it is wonderful benefits, right? Yoga releases natural chemicals in the brain that lift moods and outlook. Yoga indisputably stirs hormones that can revitalize sex lives. And perhaps most important, yoga improves health, can lower blood pressure, can fight spinal deterioration, and there's evidence that it may be even able to counteract aging. Right? I'm like, hey, I'm 104, I think, at last count here. But it's also controversial because the science contradicts a lot of the enduring myths.
Let's talk about some of those myths that you set out to dispel in the book. First myth, yoga is old.
Yoga is old. This has not come from the science so much as from the history. It turns out, if you look hard, that the modern forms of yoga were developed in the 1920s and 1930s. They dropped a lot of the sexual associations having to do with Tantra and proceeded to try to create a sanitized, healthy, upbeat, looking path to health and fitness. The biggest one that we've already touched on is that the idea that yoga is gentle and safe. Turns out that there's a lot of evidence to the contrary. It's not only in the medical literature. The Consumer Product Safety Commission has done surveys of emergency rooms showing spikes in the number of people being admitted for yoga injuries, all of which I discuss in the book. And then also, I've gotten so many letters, right? So many emails from people saying, "You think that's bad? Wait to hear my own horror story."
Uh-huh.
Where they go on about strokes, where they go on about cerebral problems, where they go about spinal infarcts or the damaging of tissue and vertigo and lots of serious stuff. There's also this idea that yoga makes you lose weight automatically.
Mm-hmm.
That turns out to be a widespread myth, and the science demonstrates that it's absolutely false. If yoga does one thing, it helps you slow down.
Hmm.
And what that means overall is that your metabolism will slow. Now, that's a good thing, right? That's de-stressing. That's probably the main reason why I got hooked on yoga. But it also means that if you eat the same number of calories every day, you are going to gain weight. After you've taken up yoga, because you're burning fewer of them, right? So that's a huge issue, and it turns out to be a huge myth. There's also this idea that yoga is the only exercise you need to do, right? It zips up your heart, you know, and does all these great cardiovascular things. It's aerobic, just like running. That's absolutely false. As I show in the book in chapter 2, you know, there's been study after study after study showing that yoga, and especially poses like sun salutation, where if you do it fast, you can get your heart pumping faster, and it can be challenging. But still, the results don't even approach the minimal requirements that health officials set for aerobic exercise. It's just not heart-pounding enough. So those are three big myths that the science challenges. And it's the reason that a lot of teachers and students have been upset by the book.
We're talking about The Science of Yoga with William Broad. He's a Pulitzer Prize-winning writer for The New York Times. We do have a link to more in his book and to the controversial excerpt he wrote for The New York Times Magazine at wordofmouthradio.org. Well, you do, as you said, talk about some of the rewards, lifting moods, countering aging, cutting stress. Tell us about the study conducted by James Corby of Stanford. The results detail a pretty interesting paradox among advanced yoga practitioners.
Right. This was really cool, and it's the only study like this that I know about. But he wired up advanced tantra practitioners and monitored them while they were meditating. And what happened is what I in the book call the yoga paradox. Things go slower and slower and slower in this kind of de-stressing and relaxing that every yoga practitioner knows about, you know, started taking place. And then in a few instances, the readings start going off the charts and people enter what they afterwards would describe as, you know, extreme states of near nirvana, right?
Mm-hmm.
Close, you know, tiptoeing down the path to enlightenment. And all the readings that he's getting make it look indistinguishable from what you would call extremely high states of sexual arousal. The heart is beating fast. The skin tends to become moist. And people have done further studies that show you lose perceptions of pain, which is a signature of orgasm, and all this kind of interesting stuff. It's this kind of hidden reversal that can take place in some aspects of yoga, which I think is an interesting kind of new field for research if science can marshal itself and keep looking at some of these questions.
Well, after all this talk of slowing down, we're going to have 1 minute to finish our interview.
Alrighty.
Today, unfortunately. But I do want to ask
Sounds good.
Where things are headed then. I mean, can any, with this idea that yoga can't be safe or may not be safe for absolutely everybody, who decides if the yoga practice is right for them? Where is it headed?
It's being decided now. One of the most heartening things I got in the large reaction to the Times excerpt is that there are more reformers than I ever imagined out there. There are schools, individuals, branches of Hatha Yoga that are out there trying to reformulate the practice to make it better, safer, to help with its evolution. And to me, that's a beautiful thing. And it goes to this idea that we can produce better yoga. In a way, that's a revolutionary aspiration because yoga is often portrayed as ancient and perfect.
William Broad, I want to thank you for joining us.
Virginia, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
William Broad, a Pulitzer Prize-winning science writer for The New York Times. His new book is called The Science of Yoga. You can pull your mat on over to wordofmouthradio.org, where you'll find more on the book and some of the responses to the chapter published by The New York Times. While you're there, let us know, where do you stand on the benefits or harm of yoga? Please post a comment or send us a tweet at Word of Mouth.